WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Last Sunday, August 18th, TV icon and titan of the daytime talk show, Phil Donahue, died at the age of 88. And while the average person might hear the words Chicago talk show host and immediately think of Oprah Winfrey, well, Oprah herself said that without Donahue, there would be no Oprah. Donahue first launched his talk show in Dayton, Ohio in 1967 and would go on to span nearly 30 years. It gained popularity thanks to the way that Donahue spoke to the current issues relevant to his viewers, and nothing was off limits, from the AIDS crisis to the death penalty.
Lower the voltage down to 500 volts while the body sags back into the chair, and you hear a crackling and sizzling noise like bacon frying.
You've known you've had AIDS now for
6 months.
This is Chernobyl. That is the unit that blew last April.
We were joined by Sun-Times entertainment columnist Richard Roper to explore Donahue's legacy. And we asked him first to describe how he saw Phil Donahue as a host. What was his style? What about his style really made him stand out? What made him legendary? Here's Richard.
The thing that initially stands out is that when Phil Donahue came along, he was unlike anything we'd ever seen before. Most daytime talk shows back in the 50s and 60s and into the 70s were very light, and they were, you know, cooking segments and lifestyle segments, and a term we don't use much anymore, but really aimed at the housewife who was home. And Phil Donahue, Barbara Walters had a show that actually tackled issues, but most of that was in the evening. And Phil Donahue came along and started, as your great piece, you know, setting this up, started talking about the issues. But he also had, Sasha Ann, this theatricality to him. He had the mop of gray hair that became the mop of white hair, and he was very demonstrative. He was also really the first talk show host to go into the audience and make them a part of the show, much like you do on talk radio.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I feel like he was doing tabloid talk television before that became like an official genre. And those shows, they really served a distinct cultural purpose back then, Richard. I remember watching with my parents when I was little, and them being almost hungry for that shock value that they knew that Donahue would bring every time. But it really wasn't just the shock, was it? I mean, these were teachable moments a lot of the times, weren't they?
Yeah, he definitely, you know, would do the over-the-top things. He'd have Chippendales dancers on, or he'd put on a dress for a show about cross-dressing, mm-hmm. and he would do things like that. But he would also talk to world leaders. He would talk to Nelson Mandela. He would do a full interview with Ronald Reagan. And he would talk about issues that really weren't a part of the fabric of mainstream television at the time. He would talk about AIDS. He would talk about atheism. He would talk about birth control.
Right.
And this was at a time when these topics really were taboo on daytime television.
Yeah, you called him in your article an influencer before there were influencers.
He really was. And as you mentioned, you know, Oprah Winfrey talked about the fact that, you know, she came along. And of course, when you talk show daytime, that's the name that 99.9% of people are going to say, and rightfully so.
Right.
But Phil Donahue was a huge influence on that, because when Oprah Winfrey came to Chicago, first on a show called AM Chicago before she made it her own, Oprah was in the audience. Oprah was talking to audience members, taking calls on live shows.
Well, to your point that he pioneered the genre of talk show television, David Player, who's president of and CEO of the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, says that wasn't exactly the plan. Let's listen.
It was really kind of a fluke. there was an audience that was present for a show that wasn't going to happen that day. And they talked about the fact is, why don't we set up some chairs in the studio and see how that would work, actually having a live studio audience for these one-on-one interviews. It really became the signature for how talk shows were done.
That move, Richard, you know, getting an audience into the room, that style of talk show, what do you think was so captivating about it?
I think it gave the viewer at home a sense that they were part of the show, and they weren't just, it wasn't just one way communication, because of course the studio audience just looked like America. Anybody that wanted to go could wait in line or, you know, write in for tickets. So you kind of felt like he was really talking to you because he was talking to regular folks in the bleachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to take it back to 1967. This is back in Dayton, Ohio. Donahue starts this local program, the Phil Donahue Show. And seemingly right away, he and his team say, okay, we got to do something different. So here's Donahue talking to WBEZ back in 2016.
The biggest challenge is staying current. And in my case, I was on at 10:30 in the morning, and this was the 1960s. And so we knew that the audience was predominantly female. And we also knew that we were very visually dull. I mean, two talking heads. Nobody could figure us out. And we knew that the only way we could survive would be featuring issues about which our viewers cared. We felt we had to make them mad, sad, or glad, or we would not survive in Dayton, Ohio.
So staying current, Richard, and staying relevant in Dayton, Ohio, back in the 60s, that sounds like a tall order, doesn't it?
Absolutely. But, you know, that mad, sad, or glad thing is great. And I think the thing to remember, too, is, okay, yes, the audience was predominantly female, most of them probably at home, maybe with children. It doesn't mean that they weren't smart, and it doesn't mean that they didn't want to stay informed about the issues, especially when you think about the time we're talking about in the 60s and early 70s, when so much was going on in this country with the war in Vietnam and civil rights protests and so many other things going on. So the idea that old women who are staying at home just want cooking segments was never really, really accurate.
Yeah. That ability to stay current and be shocking sometimes, did that start from the get-go?
I think so. Certainly by the time the show went nationwide, the reason why it caught on was because you did feel that you were getting the news from Phil Donahue, that it wasn't just something that could be taped up 2 months in advance and would still be relevant. Mm-hmm. He was talking about what was in the headlines that week.
Yeah. I'm thinking of the first show when it was still a local show in Ohio. It featured Madeline Marie O'Hare, who's the atheist who played a big role in the Supreme Court's 1963 decision to ban the official reading of prayer in public schools. She was called the most hated woman in America. And this is his first guest ever. I want to play a little bit of Donahue back in 2016 telling WBEZ that story.
She came on and put her elbows on the table and leaned across almost in my face, and she said, there are no angels, there is no heaven, there's no God. When you die, you go in the ground, you biodegrade, and you become part of the physical universe. This is the first show. Well, I mean, my dear, the building fell down in Dayton, Ohio. Sponsors canceled. I got lots of holy pictures. I think people are still praying for me in Dayton, Ohio. And everybody knew there was this new show on WLWD. You know, not that I wasn't grateful. I mean, we were very, very lucky.
Yeah, do you think a show like that could be made today, Richard? Why or why not?
It could, and there are variations out there. But, you know, another big difference too, Sasha Ann, was we're talking about a time when there were three or four channels available to the home viewer.
Oh, that's
right.
That
was it.
That's right.
You know, and there wasn't social media, and there was, you know, just the radio and the TV. So if something like that was on channel two, let's say, and then five and seven had game shows and soap operas, you can almost hear the joy all those years later in Phil Donahue's voice talking about getting a guest like that, because Donahue was great also about saying, like, hey, I'm not saying this. I'm just letting you know about the people who are saying it.
That's right.
What do you guys think?
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't really judgmental. He was giving them a platform and then, hey, let's see what the audience has to say. I'm just here as the traffic cop.
That is very true. He did do a very good job of sort of playing that neutral role. Mm-hmm. What do you think it was that gave Donahue and his team the guts to go there with some of this conversation?
I think it's like anybody who does something pioneering, you know, they take those chances for whatever reasons. Phil Donahue, first of all, had brilliant instincts. Mm-hmm. The fact that they would put this, you know, hated atheist on the first show, you know, a lot of people knew who she was, but they would say, well, I'm not putting her on. I'm not giving her the platform. And Donahue had the smarts and also the temerity to say, no, this is something that's really happening in our culture. I'm going to go for it. And he loved the fact that he was getting sponsors canceling on him, or people were threatening to boycott or writing letters. It was that was what he wanted.
It's like, yes. I feel like Donahue ran so, you know, the Jerry Springers could walk. Is that the saying? Is that the phrase?
You know, that's the downside of it, unfortunately, is that you had this explosion of talk shows, and a lot of them, Jenny Jones was taped here in Chicago, Jerry Springer, there were many, many others
came
and went, Morton Downey Jr., but they looked at Phil Donahue and took all the sensationalistic elements and added no context, no depth, no intelligence, nothing but just, unfortunately, a lot of times, just a circus. They took the circus element and didn't look at what Phil Donahue was really doing.
Yeah.
So they took all the worst elements of his legacy, really.
It was all shock all the time with those shows, for sure. And I mean, I couldn't help but notice there with your mentions, it sounds like Chicago was really a hub for daytime TV.
I think it absolutely was. I think part of the reason, too, is, you know, they didn't want New York or L.A. audiences, where there are all kinds of opportunities, even back in the day, for people to go be a studio audience at a sitcom taping or a talk show. Chicago's the third largest city. It's a huge market, but it draws from the Midwest.
Right.
So, you know, when I would walk through the NBC Tower, Sasha, and you'd see people lining up to see these shows, or in the case of Donahue, it was CBS and WGN. And they looked like America.
Yeah.
You know, it was people from Wisconsin, from downstate Illinois, from Indiana, from Michigan, from the Chicago suburbs. So you didn't get that jaded, cynical audience. You got an audience that was really excited to be there for the Phil Donahue show.
Right. You got to see Donahue up close? Sort of, when you were an intern?
Yeah, I did. I was. I was an intern at one of the radio stations that was in the same building as the old WBBM TV studios. Well, you know, for people who know this, CBS2 now is right in the Loop, but it used to be in River North, and it was this old barn building where, you know, speaking of politics, John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon had their first televised event there. So it had this long history, and that's where Phil Donahue was taping. I was on an intern at a radio station, but every once in a while when they couldn't fill all the seats for Phil Donahue's show, and that was usually because there was a huge snowstorm, they'd try to get seat fillers from in the building. Hey, anybody want to go down? So I actually got to go down
for a
few shows and sit in the audience, including one where he talked to Lana Turner, the iconic movie star. So, you know, he would also do things like that, hour-long interviews with authors and actors and politicians. So that was another element.
You're a lucky guy. You're a lucky guy.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and edited by Meha Ahmed. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset pairs nuance and breaking news. If this sounds like what you're looking for, well, make sure to check out our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you this afternoon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.